Welcome back, everybody, to A Cast in the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And today, we're going to be talking about Firewatch.
Heck yeah.
And you know what the funny thing is? We mentioned this game a long time ago. Well, I mentioned it a couple years ago in a year-end episode of, I don't remember if it's this podcast or our original podcast, but
it might have been the original podcast given the timeline, but I also wouldn't be surprised if it came up in episode 3, which we covered Gone Home. You should check that out on your podcast feed. Another incredibly well-received walking simulator, as they're called.
I hate that terminology.
Yeah, it really dumps on everything that the games are trying to achieve.
It's a linear, story-driven game.
And you just happen to inhabit a person, and people walk. That's like, you know, you walk in all kinds of video games. Why did these ones get tagged like that? I don't get it. That's a battle for another day.
It is.
Josh, we have to go back not too far into the recent past. 2016.
Oh.
Quite possibly the worst year until this year. So I've got some trivia to help you remember that time before the dark times. Are you ready?
Yes. Yes. Before the Empire.
All right. So, Josh, in 2016, what video game adaptation grossed more money at the international box office than it did at the American box office?
I don't know.
That is Duncan Jones' Warcraft, which grossed the majority of its money overseas. And as far as I know, for a bit, it was greenlit for a sequel specifically based on its overseas dollars. I really have no idea where the movie is at this point, but yes, big overseas hit. But we're going to move on, Josh.
Okay.
So speaking of fires, like in our game, in 2016, what Indian city saw a huge fire destroy a famous natural history museum?
I don't know. I don't remember that. I don't remember that happening. That
would be the Natural History Museum of New Delhi, where a huge fire tore through it, destroyed dozens of important artifacts, and, you know, it's just one of these examples of, like, precious human history being wiped out by carelessness. We just don't protect anything that's historically significant, you know?
It's almost like, you know, things are constantly burning around us, and it's the meme of the dog where this is fine. And the whole room's on fire.
That meme has become so true that I kind of feel like we have to retire it. Because there's just sections where it's like, this isn't funny anymore.
It's not a joke anymore, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Ugh, that meme memed itself into reality.
So hopefully the third one here I can get.
Well, Josh, here's a question for you. 2016 was notable for a alarmingly significant amount of deaths of iconic people. What was the saddest death of 2016?
Was it Robin Williams?
Was it? Oh, crap. it wasn't the answer I had loaded in the chamber, but now, like, no, he died in 2014.
Okay, then it was Harambe.
Wait, is that when he died? All right. Well, there we go. That takes the spot of my answer. Yes. Rest in peace. Gone too soon. All right, Josh.
Never forget.
Before I start crying, let's move on. Let's talk about some Firewatching.
So this was your first time playing Firewatch, Tom, if I'm not mistaken.
It was.
Did you know anything about the game before going into it?
I knew that it had a distinct visual style, and I knew that you walked around and explored. And that's it.
So Firewatch is a game made by Campo Santo, which this is their first game. Now, the two lead designers, or I think the directors of the game, they worked on several games before for Telltale. And they worked on season one of The Walking Dead, which is probably the most famous of The Walking Dead games that came out, if I'm not mistaken, in the Telltale franchise. I know that was critically acclaimed. That won so many Game of the Year awards. So
that's the game that both put Telltale on the map and in certain ways sealed their doom, because I feel like they spent the rest of their run just trying to, like, you know, milk that formula instead of evolving it. But that's for another time.
Yeah. If we ever talk about developers or companies and stuff like that, we can get into that. But
wink, wink,
going into this game, though, like there was a lot of hype build up for it. Like, oh, what is this type of game? Like, it is. Oh, it's just a walking simulator. But the thing was that the story is what really grabbed a lot of people, and it was just a simple story between two people talking. Where in a game like Gone Home, it was one person talking to you. Now you're talking with this just voice on a radio. And you get to do dialogue options, which I thought was really nice throughout it. So you actually could change the story however you would want. Now, you can't really change the events that happen in it, but you can definitely change the dialogue options inside the game. So
Yeah, and that's something I do want to talk about as we get into deeper into this. But Gone Home is the obvious comparison. They're both, mid-decade. I'm going to call them walking simulators, but please understand I don't endorse that phrase. But they are exploratory adventure games, like Josh said, where you are a first-person character dumped into an environment with a central mystery, and you solve it by not only completing puzzles, but discovering, logs and other kinds of clues of left behind items within an area to piece together an overall narrative and learn things about the characters in the world. So those are the kind of like styles it fits. So, hey, heads up, we are literally going to talk head to toe about everything in Firewatch. So
this is going to be super spoilers here. So if you haven't played the game, now is your time to sadly turn this off.
Like, we appreciate if you want to listen all the way to the end, but literally, there's kind of going to be no point in playing this game if you listen to this episode, except maybe to experience and enjoy the graphical design, which is very pretty.
But, enjoy it at your own leisure, though. So the game follows Henry after he's gone through some stuff, and he takes the job as a Firewatch crew out in Shoshone National Forest, which is
specifically. This is a period piece. This is set in the year 1989. I feel like that's important.
Yep, because this is a year after the Yellowstone fire, which is why they had such a strong emphasis on the Firewatch team for this park here. And you'll notice when you're walking through the park, lots of dead grass, lots of areas, things that could be easily caught on fire in this game. So they needed these posts set up all throughout this area to make sure that the forest didn't burn down or to get it properly contained.
Exactly.
So let's talk about Henry's past, though. What happened leading up to this?
So the prologue of this game, it's a completely text-based, you read and then sometimes it'll present you with branching choices scenario. And it recounts the 10-year relationship between Henry and his wife, Jules, how they met, how they dated, how they got married, and tragically how Jules was diagnosed with early onset dementia in her early 40s, how Henry's, based on your choices, how much or how little he attempted to, assist Jules, and how ultimately she went back to live with her family in Australia, and Henry chose, as Josh said, to go take this very isolated job in the middle of the woods to kind of just get away from his problems.
Yeah, it is. It was kind of rough. Like, it's not like Up style rough entry level to a story, but it was pretty deep and it was pretty dark. Just playing it through his side of what he's experiencing, going and pretty much the love of his life just slowly slipping away from him, where she just doesn't know who he is anymore. And I know the thing that set it over was he got a DUI to one night on his way home from the bar. So she woke up in the house and didn't know what was going on. And that's why the family ended up coming back. And they saw the state of the house and they said that he wasn't deemed to take care of her. And that's why the family went and took her back to Australia.
Yeah.
All really sad stuff. So
very sad. We're set up.
How can this game get even happier?
Well... Not to give too much away, but yes. So upon arriving in Shoshone National Park and getting to his station, Henry picks up his walkie-talkie and he starts a conversation with his supervisor, a unseen woman named Delilah, who for the remainder of the game, you will not meet. And this is a spoiler up to the very ending. You will not meet. But we'll explain why and what that means. But yes, this is just the beginning of a work relationship that develops into a friendship that maybe develops into something more. And it's all conducted one-sided from Henry's POV. And you get to choose how the radio conversations evolve as the game's narrative evolves.
Yeah, so the game starts off, she gives you the first task of, you can see people lighting fireworks off in the distance. And you're like, oh, mm-hmm. Well, you got to go yell at them. And it's like, oh, am I going to be that guy now? I'm going to be the boomer right now. Quit lighting fireworks.
What did you sign up for, bro?
Like, I know.
He is very like, oh, do I have to? And it's like, what did you think this job is?
Yeah, exactly. So you head down there and you see that there's these two teenage girls lighting fireworks off. They're having a hell of a party. Just two teenage girls just living the dream right now. Getting lit, as the kids would say. They probably didn't say it back then.
In the course of the interactions you have with these girls, who also remain unseen, I think we should document specifically, although you have like distance-based relationships with characters in this world, there are like no other character models but like Henry's ever within eyesight. Like those two girls Josh mentioned, you see them off in the distance as silhouettes, and everybody else is just like a shadow that you see like a few feet ahead of you. But yeah, so the interactions are always,
even when you see another person up close and personal, you don't see their face.
That's true. Yeah, and that's under a very tragic set of circumstances.
But I mean, it's true.
Oh, the joke I was gonna make is that the two girls, in all the contexts that you do interact with them, there's enough evidence that they have been consuming more beer in like a 36-hour period than I have even ever been able to put away in my life. So,
oh my God, there's so many empty beer cans.
I can't wait for the dialysis they're going to be on in their early 40s.
So you go ahead and yell at them, and on your way back, Delilah's mentioning that she sees you in your tower. Yes. And he's like, well, I'm not in it, which is a little strange. And you get up there and you realize that someone broke into your tower and they stole a whole bunch of your stuff.
Uh-huh.
But before you head back, you notice another figure in the tree lines up there along the rocks. They shine like a flashlight. Yeah, they shine a flashlight at you at first. And it's like, whoa, uh-huh. Hold on a second. And then the person just disappears.
Yep.
So
with all these pieces in place, over the next 70-ish days of Henry's life, a mystery begins unfolding. And you explore the game in chunks. Like, there's certain periods where you're left to kind of explore the Shoshone Forest on your own. And then there's points where you're on specific missions that are more or less dictated by Delilah, but you are always in contact with Delilah, and it's your continually growing relationship with her that drives almost everything in the game. Like, it's format, it's mechanics, it's story, it's Henry and Delilah just like taking on the world, and with some interesting results. So
when we talk about the relationship with Delilah,
mm-hmm.
I have to say, going right to the end here, it is probably one of the best video game relationships I've ever experienced. I think the chemistry that these two characters have together is really unlike anybody, where there's that playful banter between the two of them to the even ending into one night where they things get a little too heavy on the radio. There's something there between the two of them, and I was honestly happy for both of them because they were enjoying each other's company, and you could tell in their voices that they really were enjoying each other's company.
Oh, absolutely. Let's give credit where credit is due. The voice cast in this game, phenomenal. Like, they knock it out of the park. The writing and their delivery, just absolutely incredible. One of the best like game performances in terms of vocals I've come across in recent years. I do have a question for you,
yeah.
And I would like you to expand on what you mean by relationship. Tell me what kind of connection you took away from observing Henry and Delilah.
So at first, it was kind of a, you know, we're just in it because this is a job for each other. But as they start to talk to each other, as they start to evolve and open up to each other and understand their past and where they came from and whatnot, you can see the boundaries breaking down on both of them to the point where, like, you can tell they both kind of started to get that, like, they started to get smitten with each other, I would say. Where Henry is like, I haven't felt this in a really long time. Delilah hasn't felt it since, what is his name? Javier, something like that. And, like, they both were just enjoying each other's company to the point where, like, it seemed like they were falling for each other pretty hard in my eyes. And I was rooting for them.
Okay, so by rooting for them, would you say that you steer the dialogue options towards, you know, encouraging the flirtations, pushing them together, things like that? Would you say that that's how your playthrough went?
Yes, it did.
Okay.
And one thing I want to go back to, though, because we talked about the voice casting and being phenomenal and stuff like that. There's two little behind the scenes things that I want to add about this. So
go ahead.
They recorded their dialogue separately through a Skype call with the director involved in the Skype call. So they're both at their own houses, which is funny because they both live about a quarter of a mile away from each other. They still kept it distant, and they recorded all of the dialogue in sequential order. And the reason that they did that was because when they first start off talking, they're not comfortable with each other. But by the time they get to the very end, they're so comfortable with being able to speak to each other that it worked so well. And why the voice casting and why the performance itself was just so good.
That reminds me of Steven Spielberg shot E.T. in sequential order with no storyboards because he wanted the kids' relationship to evolve naturally over time and things like that. So I admire when creators do that, when they say, well, here, let's simulate this relationship and try to make it as authentic as possible. Mm-hmm. So I really admire that.
So how did you play the relationship between the two of them? What did you take away?
Well, see, to be honest, I had like a huge emotional impact right in the beginning when we're learning about, you know, the relationship between Henry and Jules. And when I began my conversations with Delilah's Harry, I wasn't leaning into any of her, you know, conversational advances. And, you know, if there was ever a dialogue option where Henry could kind of communicate some guilt or maybe like question things, I made him take it because, you know, I saw this as like the story of a guy running away because he was too afraid to face what was thrown at him. And, you know, we have to kind of talk a little bit more about the central mystery of this game. But this is like a game to me about people having to overcome their tendencies to fall into selfish behavior. And for my thing with Henry, it's like Delilah, the relationship I kind of brought out of them is that while they formed a very real friendship, they both through each other kind of had to face the fact that they're both selfish in different ways. So like they both help each other grow because of what they bring out in each other. You know, Henry is running away from something, whereas Delilah is stuck in one place. She's been with this Firewatch team for 10 years, you know, the same job. She apparently has the same habits that she's had her whole life. She doesn't change. She doesn't move. She's stagnant. And that's kind of a future that Henry is potentially on the path towards because he was so broken by the change from Julia's sickness that, you know, he ran away from the world. So, you know, I kind of thought it's like their relationship was like mutually beneficial but in a way where it's like, I think if they maybe ended up together, it would have been really bad. You know, like, who knows what they could have brought out of each other.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's something we'll never find out. It's always the alternative universe to all these stories. But inside of this world, there is another story that has gone unanswered. The questions and the mysteries of a man named Ned and his son.
Brian.
Yes. These were two people who used to hike the area a lot. And Delilah kind of had a little bit of a relationship, not weird relationship, with Ned's son, Brian. Because Brian was a 12-year-old who was into kind of a lot of nerdy stuff. And he wasn't really into the outdoor stuff. But he really took to Delilah because she could relate to him almost with a kind of a friendship. And
she had the warm personality that his father Ned lacked. They, you know, specifically mentioned that Ned was a Vietnam War veteran who had PTSD, so he was cold and distant toward his son. So, you know, Delilah brought in the aspects of kind of just an adult figure Karen. In Brian's life. Yeah, I don't know how much you think that there, it was a parent kind of thing.
I would say, yeah, because they never talk about a mother in it.
Yeah.
And the way that she was caring to him and just the way that she talked about him, she was very protective of him when they were together.
Yeah.
I could see it that way. But one summer, they just up and leave.
Ned and Brian just disappeared in the thin air. Yep.
Disappeared. And there's a lot of mystery there. Like, why did they leave? Not telling her. Brian didn't say anything. Ned didn't say anything. Like, it was too strange. It was very strange for Delilah.
Yeah. And it's something that haunts her in a way. She feels maybe incomplete. Maybe that was the closest Delilah, as I said, being stuck in her ways and stagnant. Maybe that was the closest to change she ever got.
Mm-hmm. And then it was just ripped away from her.
So as the summer goes on, a bunch of mysterious things begin happening to Henry and Delilah. First, the girls that we mentioned up front, they go missing and the police start asking about them. Then Henry and Delilah start hearing strange voices drop in on their walkie-talkie calls. So Henry and Delilah start jumping to these dark conclusions. You know, people are disappearing. They think they're being spied on. Something's creepy is happening in this valley. They come across this chained off section of what was known as Wapiti Meadow. Delilah doesn't know why it's chained off. You start solving some pieces of, you know, the past occupants of Henry's watchtower. And Josh, are you okay if I just kind of compactly summarize the climax of this game?
Well, let's talk about the fishing trip, because that was one of those things that kind of, I want to understand your thought process as we go through it. So,
okay. All right. So up to where we are now in what I described, because I think the fishing trip is a good jumping off point for the climax. So, you know, everything I said still happened in that order, more or less. Mm-hmm. And then, as Josh was saying, this is why all the while Henry and Delilah's relationship is growing. And, you know, through dialogue options, you can either have them start becoming flirtatious or just, you know, friends, just friends.
Right.
Ryan Reynolds, just friends.
So you go out one day, you're going to go fishing. And as you head over to the little stream or the little pond there, Lake
Jonesy Pond, I believe it's called.
You notice that there's a pad on, like a notepad on one of the rocks, and you go over and you pick it up and you look at it, and it is the dialogue from the previous night of you two being on my side, being flirtatious with each other, and Henry starts to freak out, and he's talking to Delilah, and then she starts to freak out. Because now they've noticed that someone is spying on them some way, shape, or form. And it's getting crazier. And as you're getting ready to leave the area to go try to recoup and read out what's on these notepads and stuff like that, Henry gets his ass kicked.
Oh, yeah.
He gets knocked out from behind.
He gets Pearl Harbored, just completely jumped. And he wakes up and the pad's gone. And, you know, this is where the paranoia, we're being spied on mystery, is just turned all the way up to 100.
So what was your thoughts going through all of this? Since this is your first time playing it, I want to know, like, what did you think was happening? What was going on out here in this park?
Well, at that initial moment, for me, it just kind of confirmed, okay, someone's watching them. I didn't have an immediate conclusion on, like, the how or why. Did you in your first playthrough?
No, I didn't really know all the way up until you find the last tape recorder.
Right. So similarly, I did not know definitively until that moment. But as we start step by step, so after he gets knocked out, Henry and Delilah are like, all right, we're definitely being listened to. We have proof. So Delilah arranges for Henry to get a new walkie-talkie. And now they know they're not being, like, tapped. So they decide they're going to go explore the fenced-off Wapiti Meadow. Henry can't get into it. He goes to try to meet up with some firefighters who are doing a simulated test in the forest. He doesn't find them, but he grabs an axe from what they left behind. Get into Wapiti Meadow, and we find this science installation, basically, with these giant comms towers and a tent filled with listening and spying equipment. And Henry's looking over all the equipment in there, and there's like dedicated charts on Henry and Delilah with like stats and like, you know, all these patterns based off their conversations. So that's when this thing goes really deep, kind of like, all right,
Is it an experiment? Like,
yeah. Yeah. Are they some kind of like toy? That's what I kind of got out of it. I'm assuming you did too, since you brought it up.
Yeah. And like, it was all so well orchestrated where he was even mentioning like, there's three cots here. Like there's three of them. Like who's here going on. And you find the new like little compass, like thing, like the little beeper.
Electronic compass that. Yeah.
And you look at the maps are being laid out specifically in different ways that they're moving and where they're going and all kinds of stuff. And the conversation starts to like freak both of them out to the point mm-hmm. where Delilah says that, you know, they should just burn the forest down and stop this from happening. And Henry says,
I assume you talked her out of it. Because I did.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, he says, you can't like, the forest is so dried up, it would burn down immediately or something like that. So after you talk her out of it, you notice in the distance that the forest is starting to catch on fire. So yeah, like Henry's like, did you just do that after I just told you not to? And she's like, no, I didn't do anything. I see it though. And going on. So you make your way back to your tower and there's a cassette there hanging on your front door. And you grab it and you play it, and it's made the sound like you and Delilah are burning down the forest.
Yeah.
And whoever it's like, whoever's been spying God. You, like
they took your conversation out of context and, you know, paired with this brand new fire that just started. It's like, we're screwed, because if this gets into the hands of anybody, we're two Firewatch people who just allowed a fire to happen.
Which for this type of a game, playing through and starting off at the beginning and knowing what the story is, like, I didn't expect to get into like super conspiracy theory, like there's people watching me everywhere. Like, I didn't think it was going to turn into like a horror game almost, because it is a suspense thriller at this point.
Yes.
And you are the one that's being targeted. And it's to the point too where you start to turn against Delilah, and then there's times where Delilah starts to turn against you, where mm-hmm. you guys, like, there's one point in time where Henry says, like, I need to take a break. I can't talk to you right now. And like, you go walk around for a little bit, and then you have the option to decide when you want to talk to Delilah again. Yep. It's like, he starts to freak out and he starts to panic, and she does the same thing too. And it is crazy. Just that this thing's going on to make it seem like they are being watched the entire time.
Absolutely. Yeah. So from here, we're kind of spinning right down to the end. Henry, with like that new electronic compass that we mentioned, he finds more or less the entrance to this cave that's been locked off previously, almost gets trapped in it. But in exploring it, he finds two things. First, he finds a little kind of fort that Brian, Ned's son, who we previously mentioned, had made. And, you know, Brian was a little bit of a fantasy nerd. He liked Dungeons and Dragons and fantasy and things like that. So he made himself a little castle in the woods, more or less. And you find letters that detail Brian's feelings for Ned and Brian's feelings for Delilah. And then you get climbing equipment that allows you to go back and explore the cave even more. You go down into the cave. And Josh, what do you find at the lowest part of the cave?
You find a body. And I think he's wearing a cape, if I'm not mistaken.
He's wearing he's wearing like a shirt with like a 20-sided die on it.
Yeah, but I think that's the fantasy. It does say Goodwin on the back of it, if I'm not mistaken.
Brian Goodwin is what. Yeah. So,
and
Brian's corpse, which has been down here, I believe 3 years is the timeline.
Yeah. And it's rough.
Mm-hmm.
or during one of my playthroughs, I may or may not have taken a picture of it.
Oh, I guess we forgot to mention there's a disposable camera in the game.
I didn't know it was going to come back at the credits. Okay, I didn't know it was going to come back.
And yes, during the credits, they show you all the pictures you took. That's a really fun time to mention. I completely forgot about the camera as a mechanic. And then during the credits, I have all these empty photo frames rolling. And I'm just like, oh, was I supposed to be taking pictures? Whoops. You know, so.
Yeah, I remember I played this game 3 times. And the second time I was there, it was like.
Cold. You're cold.
But yeah, you get out. And then you have to break the news to Delilah that you found Brian. And she does
not. For Delilah,
She does not. That's her breaking point right there.
Mm-hmm. Because this boy that she cared about who disappeared, and she just figured, oh, his selfish dad took him and ran off. Nope. Brian's dead. Ned's nowhere to be found. And as far as Delilah's concerned, maybe Ned killed him.
Yeah.
You know?
But when going back to the first time you go into the cave, there's a mm-hmm. part where you're crossing a really narrow piece of rock. And I got it to show Becca when I was playing through this time. If you look over to your right down at the bottom, you see a shoe.
Yeah, see Brian's shoe.
And it was one of those things that Becca's like, is that a little kid's shoe? And I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't know. And like I picked looked up to the top there, and there's the hole in the part of the top of the cave. And she's like, oh no, is it? I'm like, I don't know. We'll find out what's down there.
I can't tell you.
So,
at this point, the forest is burning to the ground.
To the point where you can almost barely see inside this forest.
Smoke everywhere.
I feel like I'm in San Francisco.
The bottom part. So Delilah is like, the Rangers are coming to evacuate us, but they got here to my station. And Henry's like, well, wait for me. And she's like, no, I'm going to go. She's just like, I'm done with this place. Like, I'm done with this job. I'm done with everything. So she bails. And Henry is kind of like, all right, if that's what you have to do, you know, he's not happy about it, but he lets her go.
She waited for me.
She waited for you?
Mm-hmm. And then you get there and she's not there.
Well, that's interesting. But so before Henry can make his journey to the helicopter, he kind of decides, I just got to check one more thing. And he finds a bunker in the woods that turns out to be where Ned has been actually hiding for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And through, as Josh mentioned earlier, through a tape cassette conversation and through letters and other kind of clues you find in the bunker, the full scope of the mystery comes into play. Ned witnessed the accidental death of his son in a climbing accident and was so kind of mentally broken by it that he refused to go back to the real world. And so he just took up residence in this valley. And he was fine just living off the land until he realized that on your first day, you, like, through just circumstances of the mission, like, walked through the cave. So Ned was like, crap, these people are too close to where Brian died. If the body gets found, I'm going to get in trouble. So like he's acting kind of out of panic because he did something wrong. Basically what he did wrong was not getting, you know, Brian's body out of that cave and kind of taking legal accountability for it. Ned has been the one following you around, sabotaging Henry, tracking your conversations, and basically trying to scare you and Delilah out of the valley. Everything was just Ned. There was no grander conspiracy. There was no government involvement. It was just a desperate man trying to scare away people from finding out his dark secret. At this point, Ned is long gone. He basically says, I know I can't stay here anymore. I'm going deeper into the wilderness. Don't try to find me.
So IGN gave this game a 9.3 out of 10. And the only con that they said in this game was it was anticlimactic ending. Do you think it was anticlimactic?
I kind of do. I've got two personal like takes about the ending of this game. I want to kind of get through the entirety of the story first.
Yeah, no, I just want to put that in your brain. So then we can talk about it a little bit deeper once we get to the grand finale here.
IGN's not the only outlet to take criticism with the ending, but do you want to kind of wrap it up for us, Josh, after the mystery of Ned and Brian is solved?
Yep. So after you figure that out, you're going to actually start heading towards Delilah's tower. And on my playthrough, Delilah said she would wait for me. Now, there's no talking between the two of us or anything until you get into the cable car and you get over there. And you arrive at her tower. You go all the way up to the top, open up the doors. She's not in there. You sit down on the chair and you put the headphones on and start talking. And she says that she didn't wait for you. She needed to get out of there. And you can really hear it, though, in Henry's voice that he was a little heartbroken. He was a little, he was hurt from it. And they have just a heart to heart conversation about how they have to go and go back to their lives or restart their lives from where they were at. And it's a little hard for the two of them to know that they have to leave this world that they're in right now for the past, 2.5 months. The helicopter lands. And you get out and go inside the helicopter and you fly away off into the burning sunset. Or do you?
Now, I guess it just comes down to a conversation about how we felt about the ending.
Well, hold on a second, because what ending did you do?
I get into the helicopter and I flew away and the game was over.
So that was the first ending that I did.
How many endings are there, Josh?
There's two endings, Tom.
Well, can you tell me and the audience what the other ending is, please?
The second ending... You don't get in a helicopter.
Interesting.
And the helicopter leaves without you. Showing that Henry died in the fire.
I have a lot for the ending. So it's either, do you want me to go first and get this all the way? Or do you want how do you want to handle this, Josh?
So I want to talk a little bit here. Let me just go into the build up here at the end, because when Delilah calls you and she tells you that they're coming to her area to pick them up and leave on the table, she says to grab all of your things. There's one thing on the table that you can grab or you don't need to grab. You know what that is?
Is it the wedding ring?
It is the wedding ring. Did you grab the wedding ring?
I grabbed it a couple days before the ending.
Oh, okay.
So I had it on. Like, I saw it on the table a couple of days beforehand, and like I said, I was playing as, like, this man, you know, in a guilt-ridden kind of aspect about his marriage. So when I saw the ring on the table, I was like, put that back on, you know?
Right.
So you're saying on the final day is when you picked it up.
So I picked it up on the final day, yes. And I went through, and I got all the way up to her tower. We had the conversation, and then the first time I did it, I got on the helicopter. The second time I did it, though, if the helicopter lands and you just kind of stand there for like a minute or two, the helicopter just takes off again. You stand there and it just fades to black. So just showing, pretty much alluding to the fact that you died in the fire.
Yeah.
And I look at it as, you know, Henry just gave up. And he just succumbed to the fire because he didn't want to go back to that life again. And because he doesn't know how to handle that lifestyle. you know, going back and having to take care of his wife after everything that's happened. Was he trying to escape? Maybe. Was he trying to clear his mind? Sure. Like, it took a big toll on him, but I'm not going to say that he was in the wrong for running away. I'm going to say he's in the wrong for having a DUI, but, and then the other time is getting on the helicopter could be a happy ending, saying that he's going to give it a shot. Is he stuck in his old ways, or did Delilah break through to him as well? Like, did she help him is the real question here. Did she help him? But mm-hmm. Now you have some things to say, apparently.
Right. So as I mentioned earlier, I was talking about Henry and Delilah. Henry is selfish, and you said in like a fearful way. He ran away from something he couldn't handle, and someone he cared about suffered as a result. And then Delilah is selfish in just like a directly personal way, where she's just in arrested development. She doesn't know how to grow. She doesn't know how to evolve. And then the third kind of adult presence in this game, Ned, he's basically a combination of both. You know, he failed somebody that he loved, and then he didn't take the next necessary steps. He selfishly just ran away. Like, you know, he ran away from the world too, but also isolated himself. He didn't take any of the steps to grow or make any significant change. And, you know, I think it's interesting that question you asked. It's like, did Delilah help him? Because I'm actually going to say, in my opinion, Ned, for my playthrough of the game, is the one who, quote unquote, helps Henry. Because Henry, from what I can see, kind of realizes he's like, you know, Ned also failed someone that he loved, but he failed him on such a greater level, and I may only have one chance to like set things right with Jules, and I think leaving is like the best thing he could do because it's his only chance to go back. And in like my final conversation with Delilah, you know, there's an option where it's like, so where do we go from here? And like one of the options is like, oh, you should move to Boulder, Colorado, where I'm from. Or the thing is just like, you know, we just have to figure out how to make it work. And Delilah like does encourage Henry. She's like, you need to go to Jules. Like, you need to go and set this right. It's not too late. So I think Henry, like, just in my opinion, has the biggest epiphany from the what happened to Brian and Ned. But this is like something a little bit bigger, and it's where I agree with, you know, certain outlets like IGN and Polygon, where I think the ending was disappointing in two ways. I don't think the murder mystery of it really gelled too well with the relationship simulator, if that makes any sense. Like this was just a really interesting human drama, and the murder mystery I felt was just in there to give the story, you know, video gamey things to do, objectives, clues, collecting, exploring. They're apparently adapting this into a movie. I hope the movie adaptation scales it way back, because this is like a conflict generator for a video game that I don't think needs it. And then the other thing I just wanted to say is like, I don't think this is a game that needed choose your own path options, because outside of, you know, the choice to either get on the helicopter and leave or stay and die, you know, like your relationship with Delilah is going to end the same way. She's going to like, you're never going to get to be with her, and she's going to leave. So like, I don't know. I don't think this needed a choose your own adventure narrative that, for me, as I was playing through, I was expecting a lot of these choices to weigh out a lot more heavily than they did. And then, you know, ultimately they didn't. So I don't know. What do you think to any of that?
No, I think the murder mystery was a little too glossed over. It really didn't stick the way that it felt. Like, oh, they brought it up, okay, and then boom, like there's a dead body.
Yeah.
There wasn't more mystery behind it. Just the fact that, oh, you just stumbled upon it. Like, mm-hmm.
Because for like the whole game, you don't care about it. It's happening. Like, you see flyers and there's offhand comments from Delilah, but you care about Henry and Delilah so much that
This is kind of like, this is the C story.
Yeah, it really is.
Henry and Delilah are A. The mystery of who's watching them is B. And then the murder mystery is C.
Mm-hmm. And then when the murder mystery, when you find out that there was no, like what we said, the B, when there was no paranoia plot, it was always C. You're like, oh, C's a little less interesting than B. So it's like, I don't know.
Yeah, it was the climax to like trying to figure out who is watching or who is sabotaging, who's listening or any of that kind of stuff. I was so much more interested in that kind of stuff than when it actually happened. I went, okay. Like, it's just some guy trying to mess around with me. Like, your mind gives you a better ending than what that's what in front of you. Now, don't get me wrong, though. I think this is a fantastic game. I think the relationship between these two, like I said, is probably one of the best in any video game that I've played. I think this relationship, depending on how you even want to play it, like it is two real human beings being pretty much stranded alone in the woods with just each other. And all they have really is their voices on a walkie-talkie. Like, how would you react to just hearing somebody's voice for, you know, 2.5 months? Like, you need some sort of connection between the two.
And let's not forget, again, what we mentioned earlier, this is a period piece. This is set in 1989. So it really takes you back to how high stakes, like, a simple dialogue conversation between people can be. You know, they don't know what they look like because their towers are so far apart that even with binoculars they can't see each other that well. There's no, you know, there's no social media, there's no cameras. This is just, you know, this is human conversation that drives everything, and it's the power of words, because that's all you have. And I think it was genius to set this in a period without mass communication. There's no way, in my opinion, this story could have worked half as well if, you know, Henry and Delilah could have just, you know, zoomed with each other. I feel like it would lose tons of the impact. Not that I'm saying a story like that couldn't work, but it would be completely different from what we got here.
Right. So, yeah. So at the end of the day, Tom, would you recommend Firewatch to anybody?
I would recommend Firewatch on sale. And I know that's a backhanded compliment, but like, I'm probably only going to play this once more to try to figure out some things I missed or get some different dialogue paths.
I mean, going back to it, did you find the turtle?
No. So yeah, there's stuff in the forest I definitely should go check out. But yeah, I bought this on Steam sale, so I got it at a decent price, and I think I'm happy with it. It's like, you know, it's very good, but knowing what I know now, I can't say I'm as excited to do the journey again because the destination let me down a little bit. It's kind of the opinion I have about Game of Thrones. Not that I am upset with this as much as I was at the end of Game of Thrones, but there's certain, for me, endings in media where it's like, that's what it built up to. Well, now why do I want to put the time into it again? So anyway,
I think it was great going through and playing it this time because I sat down with Becca, who didn't know anything about the game. And she's like, I just want to see a game that has a really good story. That's all she's ever in for. And I sat down and played through it. And I finished the first night of playing it. And it's only, what, a 4-hour long game. It's pretty quick. As long as you don't get lost in a woods, which I did. And I got really mad at myself because I apparently don't know how to read a compass. Listen, I sit in my house all the time, okay, playing video games. I'm not a wilderness man.
I can't believe we didn't do this justice up front, but again, set 1989, you navigate the whole thing with a paper map and a compass.
Yep.
And the paper map does have a little indicator of where you are, but you've really got to rely on that compass to find paths and just adjust
everything
your
looks
bearings.
The same. But
it's cool.
I finished the first night right before the fishing thing. And I said, so what do you think's going to happen in this story? And she's like, I have absolutely no idea. And I said, okay, because when I start back up tomorrow, shit's going to get real and it's going to get weird and it's going to get crazy. And she's like, okay. And then it happened. She's like, wait, what? Like, it just snaps, like, because it's a completely different tone change, which I thoroughly enjoyed, because the just the tone of like, oh, we're playful, we're joking, we're making fun of each other, blah 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 blah, and then it's super serious, and it's like, that's I love that. And I think playing the game with someone who has no idea what is happening or what's going to happen is a great thing, because it's like you're showing them a story, a visual story almost, and having them pick the dialogue options.
Like, I actually agree. I'll give you that I actually would play this again top to bottom to show Mary, or you know, just give anyone else an opportunity to kind of sit through and like observe their journey through the story. So yeah, that would be an occasion for me to replay.
Yeah, how would they handle the relationship with Delilah? Like,
yeah,
like that's the thing. Like, the first time I played through it as, you know, very flirtatious. The second time I played through it, I played through kind of both branching paths, because I knew like, well, maybe a change of dialogue here, change of dialogue there. And then last time I played it through with Becca, so she was helping me pick. She's like, you better pick this one. I wasn't going to, but I will. I strongly recommend it. And I think playing it with somebody new is probably one of the best ways to experience it right now. Yes, we just spoiled a good portion of it. There's a lot of stuff inside of it, though, that we didn't really talk about. Like I said, you don't find the turtle. Tom didn't find the turtle. And I'm really looking forward to, I think, In the Valley of the Gods. Valley of the Gods or whatever their next game is going to be. It's another hiking one. So, yeah, In the Valley of the Gods is what the next one is.
Very much looking forward to it. Absolutely.
And apparently Valve is helping publish it.
Oh, good. Excellent.
So we'll see there. Mm-hmm. But until next time, this has been Josh.
And Tom.
And we'll see in the future. Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past. So thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.